Introduce yourself, please.
Yes, I'm Cindy Holscher, Representative-elect for District 16 in Overland Park, Kansas.
Well, we have a lot to talk with you about, my freshman friend, but first, we're going to hear the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. And joining Cindy and me in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is my newsroom colleague, Dan Margulies, who runs our health desk. Dan, nice to have you back at this table.
Nice to be here.
Cindy, we have a lot to cover with you as we look forward to the new session in January. But I'm going to start with my two favorite questions. Tell me about your family and your pets.
Oh, boy. Well, I am married. My husband's name is Greg. We have three wonderful children, Sarah, Maddie, and Adam, ages 13, 11, and 9. And we have one dog named Oliver who is spoiled rotten.
We need to cover a lot of things, taxes, the budget, school funding.
Certainly.
But before we get to all of that, I want to hear what's on Dan's mind. Dan, what do you have for Cindy this morning?
I'll start off with this question right off the bat. I see that you defeated your opponent by nearly 12 percentage points. Were you surprised by the margin of victory?
And let me just mention that was Amanda Grossroad, who was the incumbent there. She was in her second or third term, I can't remember, very conservative, probably at the top of the hit list for moderates and Democrats. So it was a pretty handy victory, as Dan said.
Was I surprised, I guess, was the question?
By the margin.
By the margin. Not necessarily, in the respect that I spent months and months going door to door every night. And in fact, my oldest daughter went with me several times pretty much throughout the summer. But we talked, and I had volunteers that went with me as well, but we talked to so many people who were very unsatisfied with the direction Kansas was moving into, and that they didn't feel they were represented in the respect of how she, in the respect to the way she voted, plus a lack of connection, I think, is the best way to put it, with people who lived in the district. So I think because we had covered so many people and talked to so many people, I felt pretty confident that we would win. But it was a nice surprise to have that margin.
Now, you've never held elected office before.
Correct.
Right? What motivated you to run?
I just couldn't watch it anymore. And I would tell you, when 2014 rolled around, we had the elections then. I was kind of hopeful that we would see some of the change then, and it didn't happen. The way a lot of us thought it would.
Didn't happen at all, really.
No, it really didn't. Yeah.
So 2014 didn't turn out the way you wanted, but 2016 turned out probably in some might say better, some might say maybe not quite as well as moderates and Democrats would have wanted, but certainly there's a dozen new Democrats coming into the House, one new in the Senate, but I want to concentrate on the House. Also a lot of new moderates coming in. So there's been a lot of chatter. About whether or not there's going to be this Democratic moderate coalition in the House. And I want to know where you think you're going to find common ground with your Republican colleagues.
Well, you know, this is a great time to me in the respect that, yes, the dynamics of the House have changed. We've got a third Democrat, a third moderate, a third that are, you know, some of the returning conservatives. So I absolutely see and hope there's a coalition. I think, I mean, it's already started. You know, many of us, we know each other. We have the same goals to make sure that we are providing for the people of our state. So it's there. I mean, the desire to work together. We know there's going to have to be compromise because the standpoint of it's got to be this way or no way has not worked. So like I said, there's a great coalition of moderates and Democrats who, you know what, we want to move forward. We want to work together. We want to solve some problems.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I need specifics here. So I want to know, let me tick a couple things off. Do you think moderates and Democrats can come together to close the LLC loophole? And I just want to, on full disclosure here, I also take advantage of the LLC loophole. Can you come together and close the loophole?
Oh, I think so. The numbers look good. The numbers of people that I've talked to who indicate that they want to make that happen, that looks very positive.
What about raising the marginal tax rate? Closing the loophole is going to get you some money.
Sure.
may not get you the 48 million you need now. In fact, it probably won't. So you think there'll be an appetite among Democrats and moderates to perhaps raise income tax rates?
For the most part, I'm seeing that people recognize, like you said, the LLC loophole, closing that is not going to do the job. We're going to have to look elsewhere. So I think eyes are open to that.
Yeah. Dan, and we've been talking a lot and been doing stories about what's going to happen, if anything, with Medicare, Medicaid expansion. So let's talk about that a little bit. And Dan, tell me, first of all, brief us a little bit on where we are with that.
Well, there was a groundswell of support for Medicaid expansion in the state of Kansas. As you know, Kansas is one of 19 states that have not expanded Medicaid, and Governor Brownback has been adamant about not doing that, although he seems at times to have left open the possibility mm-hmm. that he would consider it under the right circumstances. But, you know, it may well be that the presidential election has mooted this entire question, because if Obamacare, if the Affordable Care Act is repealed, then Medicaid expansion in those states that haven't done it yet, like Kansas, like Missouri, may be a dead letter. But, you know, I wanted to ask Cindy a question before that, because it's a prerequisite for getting to expanded Medicaid, and that is Kansas's experiment in privatizing Medicaid, the program it calls CanCare, mm-hmm. has come under quite a bit of criticism. Mm-hmm. And there was a recent report done by a consulting firm headed by the former governor of Utah and a federal health official, Mike Levitt, that was highly critical of CanCare. Do you think this experiment has been working?
You know, first off, we're leaving so much money. We've left so much money on the table. And while there's talk about, you know, will Obamacare be repealed, will it not? You know, now I'm hearing even, you know, just today that it looks like that's kind of dying down, the thought of that happening. So, you know, it behooves us one way or the other to take advantage of the money that we were supposed to have anyway through the expansion. And then you're right. I mean, what we have going has been highly criticized. The privatization, and I think that should be a measure to us as far as sometimes what can happen with privatization of some institutions that are very, very important. But to the other question of, is there an appetite now for it? It's interesting because I was just looking at some reports from 2014 talking about Medicaid expansion, the LLC loophole, and mm-hmm. no appetite whatsoever for any of that. Mm-hmm. Numbers are different now. It looks a lot different. What will be very interesting and very telling is we do have a number of individuals who, during their campaigns, seemed to indicate they were moving more to the center. Was that just a campaign move, or is that really a sincere effort as far as trying to work, you know, in a different direction? That's the part that will be very telling.
Yeah. Mm. 51 new faces coming into the Kansas mm-hmm. legislature when you guys convene in January. I was just speaking with on a panel in front of the Overland Park Chamber of Commerce here yesterday. And the question came up, when it comes right down to it, voting to raise taxes could possibly be a vote to limit how long you're in the mm-hmm, legislature, sir. Mm-hmm. My thought is, and I want to hear your what you think about this, that if Kansans weren't prepared to pay a little bit more, we wouldn't be having 51 new faces in the legislature. That's what I that's how I read it. How do you read it?
I have to agree with that. So many people, when I talk to them going door to door, would say, I don't mind giving up this LLC loophole that I'm personally benefiting from because I like good roads. I like great schools. I like those things that we've been able to offer to bring people and good businesses here. So, yes, I think people do anticipate that. Again, ninth most unfair tax system in the nation.
By the way, who says that?
I will have to forward you that resource,
okay.
National Economic Tax Council.
Oh, them.
Yes. You know them.
I've got all their CDs.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a terrific band.
Well, one thing is indisputable. Kansas has, if not the worst, then I think after Mississippi, second worst sales tax on groceries
right.
rate
right.
in the nation.
Absolutely.
What
right.
about that?
I'm a fan of rolling that back. Obviously, some people say, well, we've got to get some stability there. You know, we can't be rolling back the food tax when we're already so broke. Again, I would contend that there are other places where there's money available, where we have given some pretty big breaks to some of the wealthiest, but yet penalized, you know, our middle and lower class. And that's who I'm fighting for. You know, the families who are struggling that are having a hard time making it, where that higher food tax really cuts into the disposable income.
Yeah. I want to talk about hardest on the lowest income.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I want to go back to some of the politics that we're going to see in the House from your view. But before we move away from policy, I want to hear a discussion from you two about mental health problems in Kansas. A rat's nest of problems at Osawatomie and Larned. Mm-hmm. Police departments, the Johnson County Sheriff's Department, dealing with mental health issues. I think that's going to be an important topic. I think it's crucial to fix. So let's talk about that a little bit. Dan, where do you think we are, and where we're going to go with this?
Effectively, many of our jails have become warehouses for the mentally ill because we haven't allocated the resources, financially and otherwise, mm-hmm. necessary to treat the mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And Osawatomie is simply the tip of the iceberg. Osawatomie losing its Medicaid certification and losing $1 million a month, that's a terrible thing. The state is trying to fix it, and I think it will eventually fix that problem there. But that is just one aspect of a systemic problem throughout the state. And I will say that we posted a story this morning about the Cures Act that Representative Yoder and Representative Jenkins from Kansas have been instrumental in crafting parts of that includes a big mental health component. But there is a lot that needs to be done, clearly.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen funding cuts, yet the people who need those services don't just disappear. I mean, right. And you're right. Then it flows over to the jails, that type of thing. And, you know, just the other night we were talking about, you know, how much money it costs for a person who needs mental health services to be jailed.
Yeah.
And obviously it's another one of those situations where can we make the investment somewhere else better and more effectively, more cost effectively, get the right treatment and do a better job with this versus, again, letting them end up in jail when they need treatment. That's not the place where some of these individuals need to be. And it's very cyclical, in and out of jail, not getting the progress that is needed.
Given everything else, do you think there'll be a run in the House to try to find additional funding or fix some of these problems? Or are you going to be bogged down with taxes, with school finance, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about those, but, mm-hmm. you know, it seems guns. Do you think that there'll be a run to try to address mental health?
The desire is certainly there, but you're right. I mean, the two things that have to be addressed right away, the two biggies, are the tax situation as well as public school financing.
Yeah. Let's talk about school finance. I mean, if there was an issue that dominated Johnson County politics, maybe even Northeast Kansas politics, mm-hmm. Since the beginning of the year, it's schools and school finance. You're looking at having to write a new school funding formula. I understand that there's been some work on that. Have you been privy to any of that pre-work?
Not really. No. I mean, I've heard different things, but no.
Yeah. What do you think has to be in a new school funding formula?
You know, I think we have to take a look first. What do we want from it? You know, there's talk of adequacy. Yet, I can't say that in talking to parents and talking to ministers that adequacy is really what we want. I hear that we want better than just adequate, that we like great technology for our kids. We like top-notch teachers. We like great programs. So I think we all do need to come together and figure out what it is we want and work from there. Obviously, we have to look at things, too, as far as cost per pupil we're spending. And, you know, every once in a while, a critic will say, well, we're spending more than we were back in 1992. Well, yes, we're spending more on a lot of things than we were in 1992. But when it comes down to it, we've got to look at our spending per pupil. We have more people coming in, And this morning we were talking about how even more people will potentially be coming into the area. And you know what? It's, again, the situation, if we have this lump of money and it doesn't change from year to year, but we have the increase in students, it leaves a void.
Right. But the fact is that it's all going to be, and you know, the State Board of Education has come up with some pretty lofty, mm-hmm. Pretty lofty goals. They've increased, I think, what they consider passing or adequate mm-hmm. on state standardized testing. And so, as we as you look forward, I'm going to ask about a couple of specific things. You hear a lot about what the previous formula had, and that was weighting, right, so that you can adequately teach kids who maybe English is a second language. Mm-hmm. They come from dire circumstances. So, do you think we need to go back to? Do you think we need to include those sorts of weightings in a new school funding formula?
Well, I think certainly there are some things that have to be looked at. Obviously, it costs more to educate some students than others. When you're talking IEPs, that situation. Obviously, when we talk about some of our rural areas, you have more transportation costs getting kids to and from school. So it's not a one-size-fits-all package, definitely for Kansas, definitely not even for the county in some respects here in Johnson County. So we do have to take a look because the details are so different sometimes from one area to another.
Yeah, let's go back to the politics of the House. You guys are going to be organizing here pretty soon. You as a Democrat do not get to vote for Speaker, but I'm wondering if you have a preference about who is going to lead the chamber in which you're going to serve.
No, you know, ideally, you want somebody who is going to help us work together, lead us forward. Hopefully, somebody who has recognition that this is not a great situation we're in, and we have to look in some different directions. So ideally, yeah, that's what we need, somebody who's willing to look for those solutions.
Do you think the two, what most observers would say, the two leading candidates have that? Ron Reichman Jr. From Olathe, who is a friend of State House Blend, also Russ Jennings from Lakin out mm-hmm. in southwest Kansas, has also been on this podcast. Do you think that they have those qualities that you just talked about?
I will just very nicely say I've heard good things about them both. About that.
I just want to ask you something, because before we get away from the school funding fiasco, I wanted to ask you earlier, what motivated you? What was the impetus for your running in the mm-hmm. first place? And I suspect it was that fiasco more than anything else. Is that the case?
You know, about a year and a half ago, my oldest daughter, who is now 13, she would have been 12 at the time, she came up to me and she said, go fix this. I mean, we see what's going on, but the kids see what's going on, too. They see it in terms of their favorite teachers leaving, programs being lost, those types of things. So they know something's going on. And she pointed out to me, the elementary school where my children have attended, you know, she's 2 years removed from it. She's in eighth grade, essentially. So she hasn't been gone that long. But the majority of the teachers who were there when she was a student are gone.
I mean, Why do you think that is?
We've had several factors. Morale gets a little lower, of course, when there's some of these issues going on. We've had teachers leave to go to Missouri. We've had teachers retire. We've had lots of areas where they haven't had raises in several years. And at the same time, their benefits package is getting smaller. Gets harder, obviously, to attract and retain good people when you're going backwards.
I'm impressed that a 12-year-old would have been sufficiently cognizant of what was going on to demand of her mother that she run to fix this.
Well, 12-year-olds are different than now, Dan, than when we were 12. Yeah, you're just going to have to cozy up to that.
Well, you know, and the other thing, I guess, is, like I said, they see what's going on, but I liken it to this. If your kid was going to school and there was a bully taking their lunch money, and your kid said, hey, this is going on. Can you help me? I mean, that's kind of how I see this whole situation.
Who's the bully?
I am not naming names, but, you know, we have people who have been taking money away from the schools, and it is painful. It's bad for our teachers. It's bad for our kids. So we got to fix it.
Yeah. Before we move away from bullying, I want to hear your thoughts on the safety pin controversy in Shawnee Mission School District. Do you think the school district has handled this well?
I've watched it. I was not able to attend the meeting the other night, but I've tried to keep up with it. I go back to the Tinker versus Des Moines case. That is a case that I'm somewhat close to. Lorena Jean Tinker was a parent in Des Moines whose children during the Vietnam War wore black armbands to school. And that was a case where ultimately they said this is freedom of speech. Now, obviously, we're talking, these terms today that we're talking about not just students but staff. But I go back to that court case as far as that being a precedent for what is going on here. And this to me it's a very big issue as far as wanting to be supportive of our kids, of our students, and letting everybody know that we're safe. We're trying to keep you safe, doing what we can to help you. So I'm still concerned about how this is all unrolling. I don't think we've heard the end.
Have you been in contact with the superintendents in the three districts yet to hear what they want out of you and the legislature in January?
Oh, okay. Not on that particular issue necessarily.
Unless you want to talk. Yeah, unless you have. I mean,
no.
That's
no, actually, been to several different, and I'm in that situation again, all three school districts.
Right.
So I will say kind of got 2/3 of them somewhat covered, I feel like, talking to a lot of different people. School board members as well, superintendents.
Right.
I've got a little bit more work to do there, but very actively I'm reaching out to them. They're reaching out to me.
What are they saying that they need out of the legislature?
Right now they've put together their plans for the most part as far as what their agenda is, what they'd like to see. Lots of thought going into that as far as what needs to happen. So, obviously they're not all going to agree. The different school districts, to some amount, there's going to be variance as far as what they feel is the most important and how things should go. But they are putting together some very concrete plans as far as what they feel needs to happen.
But you must be hearing something, right? What are they saying? What are they saying? You need to take this to Topeka,
mm-hmm.
In terms of education, and get this done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you saying there's no sort of overarching theme of what you're hearing from school board members and administrators in this district?
Well, of course, the whole crux there is that we've got to increase our funding because we're getting into even more concerning situations. But from one district to another, for one district, it's more of an emphasis on programs. In another district, it might be more of an emphasis on retaining and attracting teachers because of the cuts they've had to make and the changes they've made in the past few years.
All right. Two quick questions before I want to get a final question from Dan Margulies here. Two quick questions. Have you decided who you're going to support for a minority leader? Be looking at either Jim Ward from Topeka or Tom Burrows from around here. Have you made a decision about who you're going to be voting for minority leader?
Yes, I have.
Who?
I'm not telling.
I have to wait until Monday?
Yep.
All right. I don't want to get away without discussing whether or not you think there'll be a run at rolling back the law that is going to allow guns, not just on college
mm-hmm.
campuses.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most that's what gets the most ink, of course. But in any public building,
mm-hmm.
right? So, do you think there's going to be a run at that, and do you think that the legislature will roll that back?
I think it's quite possible, and you're right. It's the part about the guns on campus that gets the most attention, because even talking to people who are very strong about the gun rights and everything, they're still like, but the guns on campus. I mean, it's that's the part that bothers even the strongest mm-hmm. in that arena. So I do think that's possible. I do hear a lot about local control, too,
yeah.
As far as, local governments being able to make the decision and the fact of, how much overreach is too much overreach from the state.
And not just about guns, but on property
sure.
taxes as well.
Yeah.
You're hearing that as well from
certainly.
From local. Okay. Dan Margulies, your final thought or question for Cindy Holscher?
Yes. We were talking earlier about the wave of Democrats and moderate Republicans who are going to be coming into office, including yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Governor Brownback insists the elections were not a referendum on his leadership. What do you think?
Trying to choose my words correctly here. You know, we've heard lots of interesting things from the governor in that, you know, our revenues are horrible, yet there's not an acknowledgement. So it's probably a continuation of that same strategy that he's going to continue to operate the way that he has been while not necessarily, you know, seeing some of the information that's out there. I think, is that the most polite way I could put it?
I don't know, is it? would you like to revise and extend your remarks? No?
I think I'll stick with what I said.
We'll leave it there. Then we shall leave it there. Thanks to my KCUR colleague, Dan Margulies. Always great to have you at this table.
Thank you, Sam.
Representative-elect Cindy Hulscher, this is where we turn the podcast completely over to you, and you are going to decide what music we will walk off with. So what song is rolling through your head right now?
Sesame Street. That's really, you know, yeah.
I
three
love it.
Kids.
That's great.
Cindy Hulscher goes with the theme from Sesame Street.
Well, no, it's a great song.
Can you
song.
Give me some ideas? God.
It could be your favorite song. Is there, you know, whatever you heard on the radio? But
I love
I have
that
to
song.
Say, Sesame Street is not a bad choice.
You know, like I said, I got three kids. I'm right. not that far removed from right. it. And it's so funny because the person who lives across the street from me, Sherita Hutton, you know, she was a news anchor.
Yeah, I know Sherita.
And when she moved in, I told her, I said, you know, I know you're a news person. I said, but unless you're on Nickelodeon or Disney Channel, I don't
you
see
don't see
you.
It.
No.
You
don't see
it. But, you know, in a way, perhaps you really, whether consciously or not, choosing your, I mean, what are the lyrics here? Sunny day, sweeping the clouds away. Right?
I know. That's probably
maybe that's
why
what
it
you're
is
thinking.
In my head always.
And this theme from Sesame Street, it is.
There we go.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. There it is right there. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, our friends over there on UpToDate make a little room for us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. You a fan of the Twitter? Bet you are. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff, and my co-host Brian Ellison over there on Statehouse Blend, Missouri. You can follow him at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.